Hello and welcome along to our GK Nexus webinar, supporting the youth goalkeeper with leading sports psychologist Mr. Dan Abrahams. So hello everyone across the world, welcome along to the latest GK Nexus webinar. I am very excited about today. This one has been in the works for a very long time. As you can see, I'm joined by Mr. Dan Abrahams, and this webinar is going to be all about emotionally supporting our youth goalkeepers. So good morning, Dan. Thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
I'm very well, David. No, thank you very much. It's an honour to be on your show, doing a webinar. So really looking forward to having a conversation.
No, I really do appreciate you taking the time, Dan, to come on here and talk to our worldwide network of goalkeeper coaches, who I'm sure a lot of them will already know who you are and the background behind what you do. But if you could be so polite to just introduce yourself to all of our members.
Yeah, sure. No worries. Well, as you said, I'm Dan Abrahams. I'm a sports psychologist, a fully qualified registered sports psychologist. My background actually isn't in football. My background is actually golf. I was a professional golfer. And as I always playfully say, I wasn't the best professional golfer. I didn't win any money. And a big reason why I'm a sports psychologist now is because of what I experienced as a professional sports competitor. I was a reasonably good ball striker as a golfer, but not very good between my two ears, essentially. And so I saw sports psychologists myself as a golfer and went on to coach the game. So I've clocked up thousands of hours as a golf coach. As I was coaching, I fell even more in love with the psychological side of sport, the psychological side of coaching, psychological side of competing, et cetera, and I decided I'd go to university at that time. That was in my early 20s, to do some qualifications around psychology. I did a first degree in psychology, a master's in sports psych, and then I started to become supervised as a sports psychologist. And I then left the golf coaching behind and became a full-time sports psychologist. I suppose over the last 15 years, I've worked very heavily in football. I'd actually probably say alongside golf, I've specialised in football. I work in all sports and I've been lead psychologist for England golf. I've been lead psychologist for England rugby for a little bit, working alongside Eddie Jones. And as I say, I've worked in all sports. But over the last 15 years, I've done a lot in football, and I got involved with football 15 years ago. Actually working alongside a gentleman called Wayne Burnett at non-league level. He's now the Spurs under 23s coach, so he's doing great, which is well deserved. And I got involved at non-league level here in England. I wanted to learn the language of the game, and I wanted to learn the specific challenges players face. So it was a learning process. And, you know, that's not always necessary for a sports psychologist. You know, that's not always required. However, I just felt I wanted to really, really learn the intricacies of football and the language. So that's what I did. And 15 years later, I've worked for a number of Premier League teams, championship teams. I've consulted globally, I suppose. Now I've written 3 books on psychology of football. A couple for players, Soccer Tough and Soccer Tough 2, and then 1 for coaches, Soccer Brain. And I've worked with a number of goalkeepers, as I'm sure we'll come on to talk about. So that's sort of where I am at. And I do a little bit of consultancy within the medical department at AFC Bournemouth at the moment, and with a range of individuals, some of whom are quite prominent household names, right away down to recreational, very young players.
So it's interesting you've came from a background in golf, Dan, and I'll tell you why. Even though the goalkeeper is part of a collectively team sport, sometimes you can be quite alone in the goal in that 18-yard box, and it's got its crossovers to golf because obviously golf is an individual sport and it's all about the strong mentality. And there is a slight crossover when it comes to goalkeepers because, as I say, they're part of a team, but it can be quite difficult for goalkeepers to be alone in that 18-yard box and gather their thoughts.
It's always interesting, you know, where historically, whenever I've delivered a presentation or a facilitation to a team, more often than not, it's after that presentation or facilitation, it's the goalkeepers who side up to me and start having a conversation. So I think the whole of the goalkeeping fraternity, whether it's the players themselves or the goalkeeping coaches, acknowledge that the individuality of being a goalkeeper means that there is sort of a psychological burden, if you like. And obviously being the last man there, that very much makes it a psychological position. So I agree. I think, and also actually, David, and look, you speak to goalkeeping coaches who have forgotten more than I'll ever know about being a goalkeeper. But it always strikes me that as a goalkeeper, you can train a little bit more like how a golfer might practice. You know, you may be able to train for a bit longer because of the similar type of physiological demands. You might be able to train a bit longer. You can train a little bit more isolated. I know there's a lot of debate and controversy around that, but you can train a bit more isolated. And so subsequently, there can be construed as strong parallels there.
Definitely. And one thing I also want to talk about is obviously your work with goalkeepers in the game. So can you just go on to talk about, Dan, how you would perhaps change your approach when you're working with a goalkeeper as opposed to an outfield player?
If you're talking about the players themselves, the goalkeeper, him or herself, I don't think I really would, in terms of if I sit down with a player, whether they're an outfield player or a goalkeeper, and I'm sitting down indoors, and it's away from the training pitch, and we're talking about some psychological techniques, some mental techniques to help develop mental skill, then the conversation is often the same. And we'll come on to talk about some of these techniques, I'm sure, but I'll talk about a game face and using controllers and squashing ants, which is an acronym for automatic negative thoughts. So there really is strong similarities, as you can imagine. I suppose that where there can be an advantage in terms of psychological intervention in real time is that, you know, goalkeepers and goalkeeping coaches tend to head off into the corner of the training ground and do their work over there. And often it's a little bit easier to communicate with the goalkeeping coach and the goalkeeper, as long as they want to be communicated with, as they're training. So as a sports psychologist, if there is the opportunity to be involved in the training session, that's certainly easier to do when it comes to goalkeepers. And I think that goalkeeping coaches are a little bit more open to it. Whereas obviously if you go to the main pitch and you go and you've got, I don't know, a couple of small sided games or a few rondos, box drills, whatever it is going on with the main team, coaches, managers aren't too, you know, aren't keen for you as a sports psychologist to get too involved. Whether that landscape will change, I don't know. But that's kind of how I would say it. It's a combination of, look, nothing changes with the goalkeeper. It's the same type of psychology. Mm. But when it comes to the training, I can potentially have improve my communication with the goalkeeper and the goalkeeping coach because you're a little bit isolated from the rest of the group.
When you're about to go and work with a goalkeeper, Dan, how important is it for you to see how they respond to certain situations on the field? And so that can be both within matches and within training.
Look, that can be helpful, but it's not an essential. It's not a critical essential. Yeah. more often than not, my relationship with goalkeepers will start because a goalkeeper comes to me and says, well, this is what's happening right now in my game. So it can be sparked by something the goalkeeper says to me. Hey, you know what? I'd like to sit down, or I'd like to have a conversation. So quite often relationships start that way. And then we'll sit down and we'll, you know, we'll come on, David, to talk about some specific mental techniques that I use, like game face and using controllers and automatic negative thoughts or ants. So we'll talk about those, but those are the kind of things I might talk about with players. But often it's sparked by the player, him or herself. It can also be sparked by a goalkeeping coach. So if I'm engaged with a club, that coach might come to me and say, hey, look, would you sit down with, you know, Jim, or would you sit down with Annie or whoever it is? And because this is what I've noticed. And I'd really like you to help them. And quite often when you get that scenario, what I say to the coach is, maybe what we need to do is start by having a three-way conversation. You know, so I'll often sit down with the goalkeeping coach and the player, and I'll facilitate a process that makes it easier for the goalkeeping coach to address some of the specific challenges that he or she thinks the goalkeeper has. So we may start with a three-way process there. That can be really, really powerful. I found that that can be quite successful. However, of course, relationships can be started by me just walking over, watching training, watching practice, and then just afterwards just making a few suggestions. I noticed this, I noticed that. Got to be very careful as a sports psychologist there, because almost rule number one as a sports psychologist is never make assumptions, never assume somebody's mindset. You know, you've got to be very, very careful there. So it's always, if you're going to give some feedback from what you've seen, you know, you do have to frame that very gently. I noticed this. Could this mean this? Could this player be thinking about this? Could this player do this better? I noticed this happening in training. What's your thoughts on that? You know, so one has to be very, very careful there. So I think in answer to your question, I would say observation, I have to be very, very careful. I think relationships and work starts by great conversation, by introducing concepts, by challenging process, by challenging the status quo, and less so through observation.
Okay, and that's great. It's going to lead on to the actual main concept of this webinar. It's about the relationship between the goalkeeper coach and the goalkeeper. So moving on, Dan, I just want to ask you about some things about generic youth football. You have been involved in all levels of football, will it be professional level, academy level, and youth football. So just a generic question that I would like to put to you, Dan. Is there any problems you see that we are facing in youth football at the moment when it comes to psychological development that you believe we need to look at and address?
I'm certainly a believer. Let's begin at the beginning here, and let's take the notion of mental skill. I mean, the term mental toughness and mental strength is used quite a lot, or are used quite a lot and used interchangeably. I'm more of a fan of using the term mental skill. I would say that when we're in an environment where we're trying to help improve an individual goalkeeper's game, and I emphasize when we're in an environment to help improve an individual's game, because, you know, one could argue that when you're dealing with very young players, free play is very important. Just allowing players to just people just to go and play, that's important as well. With no coaching. And I know there's great debates on various social media channels as what that should look like and when coaching should start. And that can be a very emotional debate as well. But if we're going to go on the basis of, you know, coaching and helping an individual improve, I'm passionate about gently introducing mental skills to players. And I think that that can be done within the coaching process. I think it can be done on the grass. So I'm quite passionate about that. And I don't think we do that well enough. I, I, I'm, I'm a, I'm a big believer that young players, you can, again, we'll come on to talk about this, but I have a concept called game face. I'd love a 10-year-old to have to start learning about a game face. I'd love an 11-year-old to be able to work on their game face. And a 12-year-old and a 13 and a 14-year-old. I'd love to introduce a 12-year-old to using controllers. Again, we'll talk about it, which is basically your self-regulation techniques. I'd like an 8, a 9, a 10-year-old, because at 8, 9, 10 years old, you're starting to become really aware of the world around you and how society functions and other people's or other young people's motivations around you. And you start to have an awareness of your internal world, how you feel about other people's motivations. So I want young players to start building a language around squashing ants, for example. ANTS being an acronym for automatic negative thoughts. I don't think it's too young, as long as it's done in a fun, accessible, scaffolded way, to start introducing mental skills. And again, I emphasize fun, scaffolded, safe way to 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds to help them manage themselves in that development arena, to help them enjoy.
How would coaches do that at that level?
Well, what you've just said there is important. It's how would coaches do that? Because I certainly don't believe that a sports psychologist should be introduced to people under 12 years old, personally. That would be my, possibly under 14, possibly. Again, a lot of debate there. Again, I think it's really important to get across that, and this really is important, David. This is an art or a craft, and it's not an exact science. I can't give you exact answers to these things a lot of the time, because we're still learning these things. This is culture specific, context specific, and I'm just saying that because maybe it's under 12, maybe it's under 14. Who knows? But I do think at that early level, the coach needs to be able to do that. How do coaches do that? Well, the start of that is coaches actually being engaged in the psychosocial part. It's, for me, it's understanding that the psychosocial side of things arguably drive the technical, tactical, and physical sides of things. You know, if a coach, we're very socialized in the coaching world into tech, tack, physical. We're very socialized into, when we write our session plans as goalkeeping coaches, right, what have I got to teach this person technically? What have I got to do here tactically? That might be less so for goalkeepers. I don't know. What have we got to do physically? And the kind of, and especially the language used in terms of a corner, whether it's the four corner, what can I do in this psychological corner? What can I do in this social corner? Well, stop, hang on. We're human beings. Every single second of your session is psychosocial. Every single second of your session is psychosocial. So for me, you've got to go, when you sit down and you write your session plans, you've got to start with that belief system, in my opinion, that every single second is psychosocial. So psychosocial is always happening. So you're saying to me, well, how do coaches do that? Well, it happens through your own body language as a coach. It happens through your communication, okay? It happens through your philosophies on coaching. Am I going to be autonomy supportive? So by that I mean, am I going to empower my young player to find their own unique solutions? How much am I going to empower them to do that? If I'm going to instruct, how much am I going to instruct? What questions might I ask players? Am I going to make statements? How much do I want my players to be involved here, essentially? So that matters in terms of the psychosocial elements. And when it comes to mental skills, it really is about coaches knowing and understanding mental skills. You know, it's knowing and understanding how to help players build confidence, know, how to help players manage their emotions, how to help players focus their attention. So it does require a little bit of knowledge on the coach's part to be able to deliver it.
And another very interesting debate we're having in youth football right now, Dan, is are we losing a winning mentality in our children? So this comes down to the debate around competitive football. What is your competitive football? What is your views on that?
Well, you start competitive. Okay. I'll answer it. I'll answer this in a way that might be a little bit different, perhaps. You start competitive football at 6 years old, and let me explain that, because clearly I don't think six-year-olds should be playing, you know, competitive games, if you like. Maybe not. I mean, this whole thing is open for debate, and I appreciate it's a very sensitive thing. As coaches, we're engaged in the three Ps. We're engaged in participation, progression, and performance. It doesn't matter if you're an under six coach, an under 10s coach, an under 18s coach. It doesn't matter if you're Pep Guardiola, Jurgen Klopp, Jose Mourinho. We're engaged in those three Ps. And actually, if you're Jurgen Klopp, one thing that sets him apart at the adult elite level is that actually these three Ps, participation, progression, and performance, he's really helping the participation piece. He really engages players. You know, and we think about the adult elite level being all about tactics, but somebody like Jurgen Klopp, for me at the moment, is brilliant when it comes to engaging players, getting players on board. I'm coming to answer your question, trust me. So, look, the point being is that an under six, sevens, eights, nines, tens, elevens coach, you will have your philosophies. Some of you will be into free play. Some of you will be into deliberate play, Jean Cote's work. Some of you will feel that at 6, 7 years, 8 years old, you can introduce players, you can give them a light introduction to technical skills, technique skills. Whatever your philosophy is, the reality is if you're helping engaged players, you're helping them start their journey. You've got to engage players, you know, and so helping them engage and be involved in the participation is important. That's vital. So it starts at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. You want lifelong learners. You want lifelong soccer, football participants. So it starts there. And when we do start to get into the area where young players are starting to learn technique, or skills, or however you want to describe it, you know, competitiveness starts there. You could argue that Lionel Messi is really competitive and more competitive than others because he is very skillful. Skill, competitiveness starts with skill. There's no doubts about that. And it doesn't matter your sport, whether it's Roger Federer in tennis, whether it's Tiger Woods in golf, or whoever it might be. Competitiveness starts with skill. Competitive players are often more skillful. So don't think for 1 second competitive doesn't start with participation and then it isn't influenced by progression, by progressing skill. Now I'll answer it in a way you'd like me to answer it, which is about, well, a winning mentality. Come on, we've got to have a winning mentality. Well, what is a winning mentality? Well, a winning mentality is being competitive as you start to reach that sort of 14, 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old level into adult sport. Being competitive is having a performance process and having a mental skills framework, in my opinion, first and foremost. It's having the will to do the things that are going to help you to be competitive, that are going to help you to win. So to me, from 12, 13, 14 years upwards, you've got to help players start to appreciate that mental skill piece. You've got to help players start to have a performance process, which is to focus on specific things that they can control when they're standing between the two posts. helping them have that mental skills framework whereby they can manage their mindset. Okay, so to me, it starts with participation. It's then grown by developing skill, and then it's helping players have a performance process and a mental skills framework. It's the combination of all of those. So that's how I'd answer that question, if that makes sense.
No, it completely makes sense. So, Dan, let's move on to the nitty-gritty of the webinar. We are going to be talking more about goalkeepers. So, start off with this question with goalkeepers, and this can happen in youth football as well, because from the young ages, I work at academies myself, and I've got young goalkeepers who, at teams, they'll get two, sometimes three goalkeepers. So how would our coaches go about keeping the non-starting goalkeeper motivated?
You know, whenever I sit down with a manager or a coach, they always say to me, their most, rightly or wrongly, their most challenging thing is to engage players who aren't playing. And again, I'm mindful of a lot of the audience are coaching at a level where really you'd like to think that there's, 50-50. You know, if you've got a couple of goalkeepers, that there's, everybody is given an opportunity to play. So there's that. If you're starting to coach at a level where that's not necessarily the case, then quite simply, I think a big part of your role as a goalkeeping coach is to help players engage in mastery. To help players engage in mastery, mastering their skills. And that's the continued conversation that you need to, in my opinion, is useful to have with them. It's this constant search for excellence. And in that respect, it's setting up a program for that individual goalkeeper related to the skills that they need to improve. It's rather than them focusing on playing, it's helping them focusing on learning, on developing, on improving.
Mm-hmm. Totally changing the mindset of their ultimate goal.
Yeah, I think, again, if we come back to this being a craft, it's very challenging. Players want to play. Players want to play. So let's not ignore that. I just think sometimes I listen to some people in our industry speak, even sports psychologists, and you listen to them and you think, that sounds really, really nice, but I can just imagine coaches sort of scratching their head and going, that sounds great, but practically, players just want to play. Yeah. And it's quite a thankless task as a coach. It's tough. It's challenging. You know, I've had enough experience to know now that no matter what I say on this webinar, this coach is going to go back and go, yeah, but Dan, they just want to play. You know, it's all very well saying mastery, but they want to play. So I think it's about helping, as best you can, helping young players be a student of their game, be a student of things that they need to improve upon. You know, help them go into every single session passionate about improving the specific things that they've got to develop, their footwork, their positioning. Help them love every single second of being involved in your training sessions. Never standing still. There's always something to do. Players are always solution finding. Players are involved. Again, I suppose this lends to autonomy supportive coaching. Giving your players the opportunity to create their own activities. Giving your players the opportunity to find their own solutions rather than simply instructing them. When players are involved in your activities, when players are involved in what they're doing, they have greater ownership. When they have greater ownership, they're more motivated. When they're more motivated, they're more focused. They're more goal-oriented. So I think player involvement is vital here.
Mm-hmm.
I also come back to, and maybe I'm biased, I'm a sports psychologist, I also come back to helping players have a mental skills framework, because when you do, again, with your conversations with players, I'd be finding a way to have as many conversations about development as possible, as many conversations about being as mentally good as possible. Because if a player isn't playing, then you want to have the capacity to go back to that player and say, I know you're not playing right now, but I'm passionate about helping you improve. I want you to stick to your game face. I want you to be squashing your ants. I'm going to help you continue to be doing that. I want you to be working on the things that you know that you've told me that you need to improve. I'm going to support you in that. We're going to continue to co-create that. I'm going to continue to help you improve your game to be the best that you can be, to give you the best opportunity to be that number one goalkeeper.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep helping you and supporting you and helping you and supporting you. And that's all you can do as a goalkeeping coach. That's all you can do. You can't do, in many respects, you can't do any more.
Mm-hmm.
All you can do is help create a platform where players want to participate in training, where they're involved, where players can progress and ultimately feel like if they are going to be given an opportunity that they can perform.
And there's also another angle that we should perhaps talk about, because it's really important in the youth football phase. It's the parents. How do we then communicate what we have just spoken about there? So we've now got the goalkeeper on side. They are happy to work to the plan to develop themselves, but then we've got the parents there. The parents pay their X amount of money each week and their goalkeeper isn't getting a chance to play. How do we then approach that as a coach?
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say the goalkeeper will be happy, and that's okay. That's all right. And you've also got to work along a continuum here. You know, again, we think in, and the reason why I'm answering it this way, because we'll use this with the parents as well. There's a continuum here. There's shades of grey. There's not black and white. We think as human beings in black and white. The goalkeeper will be happy. The goalkeeper won't be happy. Well, you know, the goalkeeper might feel 7 out of 10 or 8 out of 10 or 6 out of 10, but at least they're not 3 out of 10 or 4 out of 10. So we want to nudge them up in the right direction, and that's not going to be perfect every single day. And when it comes to the parents, again, as a coach, you need to give yourself permission to understand that it's not going to be perfect. I think it is about having open lines of communications with parents if you can. I think it's about helping parents understand the program that their young player is involved in. It's helping them understand that you're involving them in an integrated, holistic program. So you're helping that young player be the very best that they can, given the circumstances. It's being upfront from the start about maybe who will be starting and who won't be starting. It's being upfront about your philosophy or philosophies. That might be my philosophy is 50-50 playing time. That philosophy might be I'm going to play my best player and that's just the way it is. However, your son, your daughter is going to be involved in a program that is comprehensive and this is what this program looks like. I'm available to answer any questions. But ultimately, the philosophy remains the same. And in that way, you're providing a consistent message related to the inconsistent landscape that is football.
Mm-hmm.
In that way, if you can spell out your philosophy of playing time and you can spell out the philosophy of development, and you stick to that, then you're giving a parent a consistent message, and that's all you can do. If the parent is unhappy after that, then that parent has to make a decision. There's, as you well know, and as people listening in will know, there's a good saying in psychology, which is control the controllables, which we use with players all the time. And it, you're a human being as a coach as well, and you can only control the controllables, whatever those controllables might be, and that's up for debate, but we certainly can't control another human being's reaction to what we're doing, another human being's opinion of what we're doing. We can influence it. As long as you're ethical, as long as you're straightforward, as long as you're being honest, that's all you can do. And you have to give yourself permission to do and to be those things and expect no more from yourself.
And going on to talk about controlling the controllables, sometimes, well, a lot of the time in football in general, but with goalkeepers, mistakes are going to happen, Dan, because we are human beings and mistakes happen. It's about how we deal with those mistakes. So as a goalkeeper, this can be really tricky for us because we always talk about this. A striker could miss 10 chances a game, but if the goalkeeper makes a mistake in the last minute, it causes a goal, and that's all anybody ever talks about. So it can be really tough for our young goalkeepers to deal with mistakes. Do you have any processes that you can discuss right now with our viewers, our goalkeeping coaches, that they can then go and help and use with their young goalkeepers?
Yeah, look, sure. I mean, as you say, this starts with communication. It starts with communication within a culture. And I think where we've been going over the last decade within coaching is more towards this notion of psychological safety around mistakes. I think as a community, we've accepted that the more I insist on not making mistakes, the more stress I place a young player under. And actually, paradoxically, the more chance they've got of making mistakes. And I'm sure everyone listening in wouldn't disagree with me that notion of psychological safety is really, really important that you've referred to ultimately. Mistakes happen. A game of football is a game of uncertainty. Mistakes can happen. And it's okay if you make a mistake. And clearly when you're, you know, if you're functioning at the adult elite level in the Premier League, ideally you want a culture across the whole team, you know, to be able to optimize that psychological safety. But let's come back to the goalkeeping coach. So I think that really needs to be part of your communication. I'm going to be a bit dull and a bit boring and come back to this notion of mental skills framework. So let's examine a simple psychological technique that I guess if I'm known for anything, this would be the technique I'm known for. I certainly didn't coin the term game face, but I wrote about game face in my book Soccer Tough 2, and it's a big part of my own online soccer academy, and it's what I work on a lot with players and coaches. So a game face is, it's essentially your ideal performance state. It's the personality you want to be on the pitch. It's a default personality you can come back to, a default way of being you can come back to if you do make a mistake. A game face can consist of a couple of keywords, a model player, an animal. I know that sounds strange, but bear with me. Or some kind of conceptual thing. Let me explain myself. So when I help a player establish a game face, I'll ask them about them at their best. Tell me about your very best game. Tell me about your very best game. I might ask them about their dream game. Imagine you go out tomorrow and you play your dream game. So I tap into their imagination. Your best game is your memory. Your dream game is your imagination. I might tap into their perception. Difference with perception is just tell me who you want to be as a goalkeeper. Tell me who you want to be as a goalkeeper. memory, imagination, perception. And as I talk about in my book, Soccer Tough, if I've got a toolkit, those are my main three tools: memory, perception, and imagination. So let's go with memory. Tell me about you at your best. Tell me about you at your best. And what I'm trying to elicit from a player, and I will actually deliberately say this to them, I'll say, I need to get some key words from you, and I need to get some action-based words. These key words need to be action-based words. Alert, alive, lively, dominant, commanding, demanding, athletic, strong, powerful, upbeat, sharp. Words like that. Words they can enact, they can embody, they can do, they can be. So I'm trying to get some words. And let's just say a player says to me, and this is going to be a real life case study here. A player says to me, well, Dan, when I'm at my best, I'm brave. I'm brave coming for a cross. I'm brave in terms of my communication, you know, my vocals. I'm brave walking out, you know, onto the pitch. I'm confident. I look confident. I'm standing tall. I'm holding myself confidently. That looks strong. And when other people see me, I'm confident. Right, you're brave and confident. Great, you're brave and confident. David, you're brave and confident. You're brave and confident. When you're at your best, you're brave and confident. Right, we've got those two key words. Is there a player that reminds you or you think embodies this notion of brave and confident? Oh, well, you know what? When I think about it, it's Manuel Neuer, for instance. His first name is Manuel, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thank you. Bit of lack of footballing knowledge there. It's Neuer. Okay, it's Neuer. Right, brave, confident Neuer. Okay, all right. I'm going to ask you a bit of a strange question now, but is there like an animal that resembles being brave and confident, you know, in goal? My player might have a little bit of a chuckle, you know, is it a lion? Is it a leopard? Is it a cheetah? Is it a group? What is it? Oh, you know, it's a lion. It's a lion. A lion would embody brave and confident. Okay, all right. Here's my question to you. If I'm standing there with you, this goalkeeper, and you're walking onto the pitch, and I said to you, right, I want you to show me brave and confident. I want you to show me brave and confident in this game. Or if I said to you, I want you to show me brave, confident Neuer, brave, confident Neuer, brave, confident Neuer. Or if I asked you, show me brave, confident Lion, brave, confident Lion. Which game face, they are game faces, which game face resonates with you most, means more to you, creates powerful images, perhaps drives a feeling of certainty through your body? Mm-hmm. Now, this player in particular said to me, brave, confident Neuer. Brave, confident Neuer. And there's his game face. And this player, every time he goes onto the pitch, is striving to be brave, confident Neuer. Brave, confident Neuer. And nothing and no one takes me away from brave, confident Neuer. If I'm playing a great team, brave, confident Neuer. If I've had a poor training session yesterday, brave, confident Neuer. If I've got a few niggles, a few doubts, a few ants, automatic negative thoughts, I'm going to squash those ants by telling myself to be brave, confident Neuer, by embodying brave, confident Neuer. If I make a mistake, and it nearly leads to a goal, brave, confident Neuer. I get back to brave, confident Neuer. If I make a mistake and it does lead to a goal, brave, confident Neuer. I've got to get back to brave, confident Neuer. If I have a pattern of negative thoughts, ants, automatic negative thoughts, when let's just say there's a free kick just outside the area or there's a corner and I get a bit nervous about coming for the cross, it's brave, confident Neuer. Brave, confident Neuer. Say it, be it, do it, act it, embody it, enact it. That's an example of using a game face, creating a game face, using a game face to deal with mistakes, but not just dealing with mistakes, to get into my ideal performance state, to pay attention during the game, to compete at the right intensity level, to retain my mental intensity. Because I think, as you alluded to earlier, that's a challenge as a goalkeeper, is that you spend a lot of time kind of isolated. You might have a lot of times when you're not called into action, but you've still got to keep a sense of attention and mental intensity. And it also helps you execute with positive intent. So here's the thing. Here's the thing. Final thing I want to say here, and I think this is really important to say. Maybe this is where me, Dan Abrahams, my colloquialism, and where I'm a bit different as a sports psych. I'm not convinced, and this is with the greatest of respect to anybody who does sports psychology in this manner. I'm not greatly into the reductionist approach. We would call it reductionism, whereby how do I improve somebody's concentration? How do I improve somebody's confidence? Okay, you've told me about that. Well, how do I improve their emotional control? How can I stop? We can take one mental technique, game face, and that improves every single area. I'm not saying there's not more mental techniques. There is. Ants, match script, controllers, things you'd learn if you read my books or join my online academy. But if you use a game face, that alone can help drive attention, intensity, and intent. And for me, if you were to sum up, whenever I'm standing by the side of a Premier League pitch, a training pitch, whenever I'm standing by the side of the goalkeeping coach and the goalkeeper and I'm watching them, I'm thinking attention, as in, is this player focusing their attention? Are they engaging optimal mental intensity? Attention, intensity, and intent, positive intent, not inhibition, intent. When a player has a game face, brave, confident, Neuer. Upbeat, alive, Lloris. Sharp, sharp and confident. Tall, dominant, Ramsdale. Whoever it is. When a goalkeeper, let's have an animal one. Relentless, strong lion. When a goalkeeper has a game face, something they can say to themselves, something they can enact and embody, it gives them the best opportunity to focus their attention, execute with intensity, execute with positive intent.
It's really interesting you would say that, because there's so many different things that would give you confidence. So we just spoke about brave and confident Neuer. Okay, so this particular goalkeeper you're talking about is looking at Neuer and thinking that's how they want to play. But then on the other hand, a goalkeeper who plays completely different, David De Gea, he's calm, he's collective. Another goalkeeper could take confidence from that. So it's really interesting how we can look at two different people and take the same sort of confidence from them, two different people.
And I think you're 100% spot on, and the beauty about a game face is that it is a mental technique. So it is a fixed mental technique that is robust enough to serve any individual. And that's really important, because as you're saying, you might say brave, confident Neuer, and that might not resonate at all with one goalkeeper. And it might mean the world to the goalkeeper who chose that game face. As you say, Neuer is different to De Gea. And a goalkeeper might go, you know what, I don't want to pick a model goalkeeper because I'm myself. I get a lot of players go, I just want to be me.
Yeah.
You know, and so they like the lion, or they like the animal technique.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or they might pick a concept like a brick wall. Basically, these are pictorial metaphors.
Yeah.
Or they might just have the key words, and that might be enough. It's enough for them to utilize their self-talk, utilize their body language to say it, be it, do it, act it. And just final thing to say is what's relevant about what you said, what's pertinent about what you said, is this can be a co-creation. And this is where you as a goalkeeping coach are such at a greater advantage than someone like me. Because if I sit down with a goalkeeper and the goalkeeper says, especially a young goalkeeper, because they might say Neuer, and as a goalkeeping coach, you might go, well, hang on a minute, I'm not too keen on that one for you there.
Yeah, because I don't want to run 40 yards out your goal.
Well, there's that. Yeah, absolutely. And it might not relate to the kind of skills that you want this player to develop.
Yes.
Now, there's some debate over that, you know, this is a craft and it's not an exact science. And I might challenge you on that one. And I might go, well, hang on, if this is coming from the world of the player, the brain and the nervous system, why don't we just go with that for a bit and see where we go with it. And then if they start running 40 yards out of goal when they shouldn't do, then we know, okay, maybe we need to rein this in. And it's a co-creation, David. So the beauty of this is that, you know, as a goalkeeping coach, you can help massage this game face. And, you know, if the keywords aren't great, you don't think the keywords are appropriate, you can help direct them in or guide them in a slightly different direction. Mm-hmm. But you've always, I do think as coaches, we do have to help players be the CEO of their game. So whilst you might disagree to begin with the game face they've come up with, you might run with it and find evidence as to where they've got it wrong, essentially, and then co-create something slightly different that might be more attuned to the kind of plays, the kind of development that you want them to have.
And something else I wanted to talk about, Dan, was, and this could tie in with game face, I'm sure you'll be able to tie it in with that, but it's playing with fear. Mm-hmm. So a lot of players in football and goalkeepers play with fear. So let me just go into an example. So a young goalkeeper, let's say he makes a mistake in the first minute of the game and it came from a crossed ball from a wide area. He's went to collect the cross ball. He's came, he's dropped it, and a goal had resulted in his mistake. So this young goalkeeper could now be playing with fear for the rest of the game. Any time a cross comes into the box, they are startled with fear and they're not wanting to come and maybe collect that cross. So what kind of process and techniques can we do to help goalkeepers with this?
Okay, so let's go back to what I said with that game face in terms of, let's not be too reductionist, let's engage here. You can absolutely utilize, and in my opinion, should utilize a game face. Even if you don't call it a game face, just helping players develop some keywords. And let's bring in, say, what I call controllers.
Okay.
Over the last 15 years working with Premier League players, I soon learned that, and this is a generic broad brush statement, so please excuse me, I don't want to offend anybody, but a lot of players will, because they've got a lot of time on their hands, they'll train, have lunch, go home, play on a PlayStation for hours. Lots of young people do, and that's fine. But I was trying to find a way to describe self-regulation without using the term self-regulation. And so I came up with the term controller, because when you play on a PlayStation, let's say you're playing FIFA, you're using a controller. You're controlling the character on the screen. You're using a controller. And there's lots of intricacies around controllers that you can pick up when you read my books and perhaps get into my online academy and stuff. So there's all kinds of nuances and stuff as to how you use them. But controller one is your self-talk, talking to yourself. Controller two, I call your body controller. And it is your body language, but it's more, as you've heard from the words I've used when I was describing game face, your body controller is being and doing and acting. It's embodying who you want to be. I'm describing it this way because fear can largely be managed by utilizing, yes, you can use your self-talk controller, but very much body, using your body. You described a scenario whereby a goalkeeper might make a mistake and become fearful, or just a goalkeeper might walk onto the pitch quite fearful and they don't want to come for a crossed ball. They don't want to come for a cross. They're fearful of dropping it. They're fearful of getting injured, maybe. Yeah. They're fearful. There's a number of things I'm sure that they could be fearful of that you and your members will know much more than me about. But this is where your body controller, and if you don't want to use the term controller, that's fine. You can just say body language, but body is important. Show me great body language. Show me great body language. Show me great body language. Show me brave confidence. Show me brave confidence. Show me brave confidence. And this is where potentially establishing some keywords, if not a game face, can be really useful, because you can bring this game face or these keywords or however you want to describe it into your coaching sessions. And you can remind and reinforce every, not every single second of the session, but often in your activities. So you might do a cross, you know, a crossing activity, right? And you might say, right, you know, Johnny, Mary, you've got your keywords. I want to see you come for this catch in the style of your keywords. I want you to use your body here to really emphasize coming for this catch in the style of your keywords. As a coach, you have to help them become addicted, obsessed, strong words I know, passionate about, maybe a lighter and gentler word, about executing every action in the style of their game face or in the style of their keywords or in the style of great body language. Because when you do that with every activity, when a player is nervous, they'll be more acquainted with using their body to turn down the volume of fear. Using their body to turn down the volume of fear. Now, let me tell you where this stems from. So, in the world of cognitive linguistics, please excuse that term, cognitive linguistics. So, language and the brain. What we can strongly hypothesize, what we strongly believe is this. Imagine a kid, a very young child, possibly is only just learning to speak, possibly can't even speak yet. A caregiver, the child is looking at their caregiver, and the caregiver says, would you like some more? Okay, and the child's looking at them. Okay, and the caregiver, would you like some more? And let's just say the child can speak a little bit. Goes, yes, please. Yes, please, mummy. Yes, please, daddy. And the caregiver pours into the glass more liquid, whatever that liquid is. They pour more liquid in. What the child sees is quantity and verticality. Quantity and verticality. So verticality being up, okay, quantity being more. Verticality being up, quantity being more. Imagine you pouring in, it's going up, and there's more. Up is more. Up is more. Up is more. From day dot, as human beings, we learn up is more, up is more, up is more, up is more. We get picked up by our caregiver who is above us. Higher is more. Less is down. Down is less. Let's think about our language. I'm in cloud nine. I'm in heaven. I'm going up. I'm over the moon. How was that performance? Oh, it was so good. I'm over the moon. We go up the table. We're moving up in the world. This team is on the up. I feel down in the dirt. They're dropping like a stone. Up is more. In control, picking up somebody is higher. I'm up. I'm high. I'm above. This is how body language works. It's a cognitive linguistic process, and it is embodied. Our concept of up and better and stronger is embodied. It is based on everything being up. Come on, cheer up. Cheer up. Our facial up. When we're happy, up. When we're sad, down. When a player comes and works with me, that player's going to have a game face without fail. When a player comes and works with me, that player is going to become a master of using their two controllers, their self-talk and their body. to be, do, act, to say, be, do, and act their game face. They're going to execute every responsibility within their role as a goalkeeper in the style of their game face. They're going to walk on that pitch with certainty because they know that they've got two controllers that they can utilize at any given time to be able to help them manage themselves. One of my clients who played in the Champions League final back on June the 1st this year, 2019, walked onto that pitch and top of his priority list was not winning the Champions League. Top of his priority list was not performing at his very best. Top of his priority list was being in his game face, which happened to be relentless and dominant. Doesn't have a model player, doesn't have an animal, just relentless and dominant. My job on the pitch is to be relentless and dominant. Nothing and no one takes me away from relentless and dominant. Every action, every motion, every movement, every responsibility within my role executed in the style of my game face, relentless and dominant. I have my two controllers there to take charge of myself, to be in control of myself, to be up at all times. If we go a goal behind, I stay up. I stay relentless and dominant. If my opposition is getting the better of me, I keep staying up. I keep being relentless and dominant. I stay in my game face. That is my number one job. Now, that is where I would strong arm anybody listening into this. I would try to persuade anybody listening to this that goalkeeping is a psychosocial process. Every goalkeeper needs a game face or a couple of keywords. Every goalkeeper needs the capacity to be up when everything around them wants to bring them down. Because what we know in science is more is up, in control is up. Use your controllers, use your game face, squash your ants, your automatic negative thoughts. That is critical. And yet 99.9% of the time when I sit down with a footballer and I ask them, what are you trying to achieve mentally? They can't give me an answer. David, they can't give me an answer. And David, that is at the very top level of football. That's at the elite level where millions of pounds are on the line. Careers are on the line. They can't give me an answer. They can't give me an answer. They can't give me an answer. How is that possible? Mm-hmm. How is that possible? I ask you, how is that possible? How is that possible? They cannot give me an answer. So that's what I'd say to your audience. And you can start that fun, scaffolded, optimal mental skills process, from the age of 8. By just playing around with some keywords, by playing around with body, the body controller or body language. Just start there. Just start there. Just gently introduce it and build it over time. Because I'm sick to death of sitting in front of a potentially brilliant 20-year-old goalkeeper and that guy doesn't have a clue what he's trying to achieve mentally. Or that girl doesn't have a clue what she's trying to achieve mentally. Not good enough. Not good enough, in my opinion. And my job, I've made it my business to start to convince the world that. And it's not to say, last thing to say here, mate, it's not to say, I get that some keepers have so much skill in their hands and their feet that they can get away with poor mental skills. I get that. Or poor mental process. They can get away with not having to articulate that. I get that as well. I get that. But I think that they can be better at what they do if they are working on it, if they do have a framework in place. I think that they can be even better, have more fun in the game and just be better at what they do. And it can improve the relationship between goalkeeping coach and goalkeeper. So I think that's really important to say.
That's absolutely fascinating stuff, Dan. I've really enjoyed having you on the webinar today. I think the main takeaway from the webinar today is all about the game face. I am sure you have got all of our members busting to go back to the training ground now and talk about game faces with their goalkeepers. And I would encourage our members who are watching this, if they do go and work on this with their goalkeepers to send in the results to myself and I can send them on to Dan. I'm sure Dan would be really interested to hear about what game faces your goalkeepers are going to be choosing. So Dan, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a very worthwhile webinar. I can only thank you on behalf of myself and all of the members watching this today.
No problem. It's been an honour and a pleasure, mate. Thank you for inviting me on.
And that brings the latest GK Nexus webinar to an end. Thank you once again to Mr. Dan Abrahams for joining me today. It was a pleasure to talk to Dan and learn all about some fantastic tools and techniques that us as goalkeeper coaches can go and share and support our young goalkeepers with. Now, I am also delighted to share with you that Dan has very kindly created an exclusive offer only available to GK Nexus members. Now, this offer is a 50% discount to join the Dan Abrahams Soccer Academy. This is a fantastic and unique resource all about helping the players improve their mental skills within the game of football. Now, what's so special about this offer is if one of our coaches signs up to it, Dan will also give access to one player and that player's parents as well. So it is a fantastic offer. I'm very appreciative that Dan would offer this to the GK Nexus members. Now, all you have to do to get this is to email Dan, and his email address is dan@danabrahams.com. and quote GK Nexus. If you do that, Dan will give you all of the steps and how you can secure your 50% discount to the Dan Abrahams Soccer Academy. And to give you a quick look into what you can expect to get from the Dan Abrahams Soccer Academy, please watch this video.
Hi, I'm Dan Abrahams, sports psychologist and founder of the Dan Abrahams Soccer Academy. I've developed this online academy for all you players, coaches and parents who are looking for support with the mental side of the game. In my experience, there are very few go-to places for players to develop their mental skills or resources available for coaches to improve their ability to teach the psychology of the game. Likewise, in clubs, there are no joined-up solutions for them to help players, coaches and parents work together on the same psychological skills. I speak to so many of you who are frustrated by the lack of resources available. I'm constantly hearing from people in the soccer community that they want easy to apply and simple to understand soccer psychology strategies, and this is where my online academy can help. The academy consists of a series of exclusive video sessions that bring the psychology of soccer really alive with my simple yet powerful tools and techniques. These are the same techniques that I use in my one-to-one sessions with players and coaches of all ages and at all levels. They provide you with a step-by-step approach to developing your soccer game, your soccer coaching, and your soccer parenting. I look forward to seeing you there.